Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
What's up, Open Floor Globe? I'm your host, Michael the Pod Pina, and I'm joined on the other line by my good friend, Sports Illustrated staff writer Rohan Nadkarni. Rohan, we made it. The regular season is over. The playoffs are nearly upon us. How do you feel? Are you energized, exhausted, excited? Just what is your temperature right now?
I love the playoffs, man. I'm really excited. I think we've been talking about it for months now. We want to see what the matchups are going to be. I'm thrilled. Like, I'm ready for it. I know it's going to be an absolute push, but it's my favorite time of the year. Like, I enjoy sinking my teeth into all the series. I love seeing the adjustments after game one. I love the freakouts after game one. I love pretending like anything matters besides three-point shooting. It just is really, truly a great time of year. I love the play-in tournament. Back-to-back years, we've actually had like really interesting teams in the play-in tournament. So I'm hype. Mike, I told you I was going to throw something at you. I just want to know, when are we going to reveal the true toxicity of our offline relationship as it relates to the Heat and the Celtics? Because it just is off the charts, like flowing with hate in the last couple of weeks.
There's some competitive banter, I would call it, for sure.
You and I have like really, really like staked out positions as if like we have like something to do with each like franchise's success. It's really awful.
It's bringing me back to, I don't want to call out who I had these exchanges with, but I had exchanges with someone who works in our industry, like 10, 12 years ago. And it was just like, it was Celtics Lakers related. And it was just like, I think back on that now and I'm like, I'm glad that I matured. And then I look back at our correspondence and I'm like, I have not matured at all.
No, I will say, like, it's taking me back to like the high school lunch table. there's some bleak stuff in these texts that I think if people saw, they'd be really appalled.
I think someday we'll have to publish. It's good content, honestly.
It is. But I think
we'd both be fired immediately. But,
yeah, I think also we're both pretty aware about how ludicrous it is. So I think that helps. Like, really, really insane shots would be taken at people there.
I feel like it leaks out onto Twitter sometimes.
A little bit. Yeah. On Twitter, I'm more just trying to prod you more than anything else.
I know. I just ignore basically all of your tweets.
Yeah, yeah. Which I respect, which is probably the right move. Objectively the right move.
Okay, so on today's show, this is going to be a very exciting episode because we are you just said that you love the play-in, which is wonderful.
I do.
We're going to be previewing all four play-in games. We're going to be predicting some winners. We're going to be talking about the matchups that we like, etc. But first, a quick reminder to our listeners to please keep your emails coming. This is the busy season, people. I want a wave of questions this week. Openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. Okay, Rohan, so let's just hop right in to some play-in talk. As I said, we have four big games happening over the next 2 days. A quick primer for everyone who is unaware. Tomorrow night, we're recording this on a Monday. Tuesday night, we have Nets-Cavs, followed by Clippers-Timberwolves. On Wednesday, we have Hawks-Hornets and Pelicans-Spurs. The winner of Nets-Cavs plays the Boston Celtics in a 2-7. The winner of Clippers-Timberwolves plays the Memphis Grizzlies on the Western Conference's 2-7. The loser of those two games plays the winner of Hawks-Hornets and Pelicans-Spurs for the right to play the Suns in a 1-8 and your Miami Heat in another 1-8 in the eastern side of the bracket. So, Rohan, that was a mouthful. Rohan, to kick off our deep dive, which of these games is the one you're most looking forward to, and we'll get into it that way?
I think Clippers-Wolves is probably the game I'm most looking forward to, just because I think it's going to be the closest. I think it's the most intriguing, especially now that the Clippers have Paul George and Norm Powell back. I think that's the game that's going to have the most talent on the floor. Nets-Cavs is a close second.
Wait, no,
let's focus in on Wolves-Clippers. Let's do it.
Yes, let's go.
I mean, I think the Clippers, I was looking at, I'm not really like a betting guy, but now when you even just look at ESPN for the schedule or something, it puts the betting line on there. And I was surprised to see the Wolves are favored in this game. I understand that they're at home, but I'm a little bit surprised just because, you know, I think the Clippers, Paul George like missed 3 months with that elbow injury, came back game one, dropped 34 points. Like, I'm pretty sure he's probably shooting over 50% from three in these five games. I mean, he's been absolutely lights out from three. He's such a good player. And I think that last year during the playoffs, I think he reminded people a little bit of what he's capable of. I think the Clips can very easily win this game. And I think that'd be a fascinating matchup with them in Memphis. I wrote about this a little bit in our play-in preview. It's interesting. Kat's obviously such a great shooter, but I think that plays into the Clippers' hands a tiny bit, because if they go small, I mean, Kat is not somebody who's going to, you know, can he punish them on the glass enough that he'll make the Clippers regret going small if that's what Ty Lue chooses? I'm not sure. So I think it's going to be, in fact, a very interesting game as well.
Yeah, you know, I think this is, I think I'll agree with you about just level of interest in play-in games. I think I'm going to be attending the Brooklyn Nets Cavaliers game, so I got to hurry home and catch this one, because I'm like, the matchup is just, it's fascinating. I think that I wrote about the Clippers last week. I'm high on the Clippers. I love their versatility on both ends. Love that Norm Powell is back for them and just gives them another option, and they can truly play any type of style. They have maybe the best collection of three-point shooting in the entire playoffs, assuming that they make the playoffs. Like, their team is just absolutely stacked. Paul George, as you said, looking like a superstar. The ingredients are all there for them to make a run. But I do feel like, to answer your specific matchup related question, I don't think you can go small against Kat. And I think that like the option there would basically be probably Rocco, former Karl Anthony Towns.
Yeah,
teammate.
I mean, even Marcus Morris.
Sure, yeah. Karl Anthony Towns is an absolute monster in the post. Like, he is. Were you about to refute that?
Well, I was looking at the stats and I was surprised. I think you can live with it. I think he's actually under 1 point per possession in the post. Now, granted, I don't know how often that's taking into account, like when he's getting doubled, kicked out, etc. Basically, when I looked at the post-up stats, they were not as kind of striking as I thought they would be. And I also think that if you are keeping Kat in the post as opposed to the three-point line where he's really, really dangerous, I think you still make that trade-off. Because I think their shooting can kind of offset the damage he's capable of doing in the post.
It's a fair point. I mean, this team takes a ton of threes, and he's a part of that. Yeah, no, I kind of don't really care what the numbers say. Like, I go by with what I've seen from Cat mm-hmm. this season and what I've seen when teams go small against him. Because, of course, when you're just looking at numbers,
they're flattened.
We're including like him against DeAndre Ayton.
Right.
And it's like, that's not what we're doing here. So if you were to go small and put him on Roko, that's just a trip to the free throw line, a kick out to a wide open 3-point shooter, or him just going to the hook and it's just, it's unstoppable. Also, he can get guys in foul trouble too. So mm-hmm. I like that matchup for Minnesota.
I will say the Clippers don't have to go small because they also do have some pretty capable centers.
Right. And I don't think they will. Like, I think that's a card that you don't need to play right now. They'll go small if they're suddenly down by 17 in the third quarter. That's mm-hmm. when you go small. To start out, I think Zoo is huge. Hartenstein has been
one of the best backup, probably the best backup big in the league this year.
He's in the conversation for sure. The Hartenstein essence, you know?
Yeah.
it's just happening.
The Hartenstance?
Yes, that's a much better way to put it.
Yeah.
So they have a ton of options. I kind of get why Minnesota is favored, though. Like, the crowd is just going to be, that's going to be a top five atmosphere for the entire season. Minnesota Timberwolves fans are just like, they're rabid for this. This team does not go to the playoffs basically ever. And to have a win, I know this isn't a win or go home, but this is a win or have to play the Phoenix Suns in round one. And I think that Minnesota, if they were to win, especially convincingly, they would have some confidence going up against the Memphis mm-hmm. Grizzlies. I'm not saying that they'll win that series, but
we talked about it. We both want to see that series.
Yes, so a part of me is rooting slightly for Minnesota to win this because mm-hmm. that would be a fascinating matchup. But beyond, like, I'm trying to think, like, who necessarily would bother Paul George defensively on Minnesota's roster? And I feel like he can eat. I feel like this could be a big Paul George game, and that's tough. This could just be a classic. What's so fascinating about the play-in is, like, the best player on the better team, or like the team that has the better player is, I would say, we don't have a lot of data here to support this, what I'm about to say, but like that team's probably going to win more times than not. And I guess it's just like zooming out and asking like a very random question, but like, who's better, Paul George or Karl Anthony Towns? Like, I don't know the answer to that question.
Well, it's interesting because when they play each other, like, I think you'd want George because of his versatility, right? Like, he's someone who could guard 1 through 4 and some centers in the league. The thing is, in this matchup, it's kind of tricky because, you know, when George is your best player, but it's also like in most nights, a reason why you want him is because he can also neutralize the other team's best player. He can't really do that in a matchup with Cat. So it makes it very interesting in this game because I think in a vacuum, I'd rather have PG. But in this matchup, I think that they don't cancel each other out. They're just occupying different areas of the court. You know, the one reason why I think the Clips might go small for starters, you mentioned, like, who can slow down Paul George? I just think the Clippers' best asset is like just the stupid amount of talent they have on the wing. Like, it's really crazy. We mentioned the 3-point shooting.
Mm-hmm.
And that is Minnesota's weakness at the same time. So I just think it's going to be really interesting. I'm with you. Like, the crowd's going to be nuts. And it's not that I don't think Minnesota can win. I think it's going to be a really good game.
I think Minnesota is fourth in net rating since like January 1st, something wild. Like, they're a really impressive basketball team. We all know about their starting five, and Pat Beverly is, you know, he's going up against his former team. I'm sure he'll be on his absolute best behavior and not try to get under anybody's skin or anything like that. So it's going to be a really fun game. Who are you picking for this one?
I think I'm going to go with the Clippers.
Wow. Okay. I don't think that's crazy because I think this is a coin flip game, to be honest. I'm going to pick the Timberwolves.
You're the one who's been telling me all season long the Clippers are going to win the title. And hey, now you got
it's okay. The road there is just going to be really hard, but I'm not giving up on them. I'm going to have my cake and eat it too.
Yeah. I love Ty Lue in moments like these as well. I'm going with the Clippers.
You know, it's funny that you bring up the coaching matchup because I feel like Chris Finch is like low key one of the five best coaches.
I mean, he's done a fantastic job. He's done a fantastic job.
He's incredible. Their offense it's really hard to guard. And we talked about Cat a lot in this conversation and how you slow Cat down, but we haven't mentioned Anthony Edwards, who is next year, Anthony Edwards, like I might do something crazy and just like predict him to an MVP. Like that's the type of leap that I see out of him. He's amazing. The pull up three has been falling for him. So I don't know. He could just go ballistic and be the best player on the court. That's entirely possible. D'Angelo Russell is a talented player with, I guess, impressive on-offs for most of the season.
I feel like there's nothing D'Lo can do to make anyone believe him at this point, but he's had a decent season. Not been outstanding, but he's had a decent season.
Absolutely. And one thing about the Clippers also is they've really struggled to rebound. Hasn't been a strength necessarily of the Timberwolves, but I feel like Jared Vanderbilt will be a thorn in their side.
Yeah, and Pat Beverly too, frankly.
Exactly. So I'm going Timberwolves. And I think it's going to be like, even though the Clippers have... Did you know the Clippers... I ruined my trivia question, but the Clippers have the second best offensive rating in crunch time this season, which is an absolutely wild statistic. And it's basically all because of Reggie Jackson.
Reggie Jackson, yeah.
Yeah, which is hilarious. I love
Mr.
Reggie
Jude.
Jackson.
Mr. Jude.
Love, Reggie's love everything just, about yeah. that man. Reggie Pat Beverly is the real matchup. But I'm going with Minnesota. I think it's going to be a really close game, really fun game. And we'll see if Minnesota can, you know... The Clippers love to isolate. They love to take tough shots. We'll see if Minnesota can kind of turn them over a little bit. Mm-hmm. That's a big part of their success defensively. Another thing is that the Clippers really don't get to the basket at all. And teams that have had success against Minnesota's defense have lived at the rim, particularly when Carl is on the court. So I just think that a lot of the ways you can exploit Minnesota, LA is not really built to do so. So, you know, they could get hot from behind the 3-point line, as you said. It's a one game thing, and that's like the subtext or whatever of our entire conversation is just going to be whoever wins the 3-point battle could win the game. But I'm going Minnesota here, and I feel okay about it.
I think we're on the same page that this is going to be a close game, and I'm not mad at the Minnesota pick, certainly.
Okay, so you were about to, before I cut you off, you were about to go into Nets-Cavs.
I was just going to say this would have been a great game if Jared Allen was playing, but because...
He hasn't been ruled out.
I don't have a lot of confidence that him or John Collins are going to play in their respective playoff games, which has put a little bit of a damper on... I actually think Hawks-Hornets, in terms of just pure entertainment, is going to be the second most entertaining game.
If you do not like defense, yes, I agree.
I mean, yeah, they're going to be just running up and down the court, just, you know, LaMelo throwing lobs, like Trey pulling up from hella deep. Like, that's what you want in a play-in game, in my opinion.
So do you want to talk about that game next, or do you want to talk about Nets-Cavs?
I'll let you pick.
Nets-Cavs it is.
Okay.
I mean, we've been... waiting for a Nets play-in game, I feel like, for months. They get the 7 seed, so they will host the Cleveland Cavaliers, and Kyrie Irving can play, so congratulations. to the Nets organization for handling this brilliantly throughout the past 6 months. They got what they want, I suppose. And I think the Nets are heavy favorites in this game. And I don't know how close it's necessarily going to be. Their last matchup was actually kind of competitive without Jared Allen. And basically, Durant played 41 minutes. Kyrie played 40 minutes. Is that just... I'll start here. Is that just the strategy? Is that just Brooklyn's strategy from this point on? Is it like, if you're Steve Nash, is it just like, our defense is going to be terrible no matter what? They gave up, what, like 130-something, maybe 120-something to the Pacers in a pretty important game yesterday. It was just like, these guys can't stop TJ McConnell in a pick and roll. But is their strategy in this game, does it boil down to, we're just going to play Kevin Durant 47 minutes and Kyrie Irving 45 minutes? Is that basically what it is? Is that too reductive?
No, I mean, I think that they've proven that that's what their strategy is. They don't care about the regular season. They don't care about defense. They have the ultimate trump card, and they're like, yeah, if you want to go shot for shot, we have the best shot maker in the history of the sport who can hit any shot from anywhere on the court. Like, good luck. Yeah. Like,
we have two of those guys.
Yeah.
We have two.
Exactly. And yeah, and they've both done it on the biggest stage. Like, oh, you want to have Tyrese Halliburton go shot for shot with KD and Kyrie? Sure. You want to have pick a player. They'll gladly say, let's trade buckets and see who comes out on top. So, and they don't mind. Like, they are also like foregoing like modern sports science. It's like, yeah, we'll play Kevin Durant 46 minutes a night every game in the playoffs. He wants to do it. We're cool with it. Like, let's go. So, yeah, I also think that, I mean, the Nets are literally heavy betting favorites in this game. I think they're heavy favorites for many reasons. I'd be shocked if they lost this game. And honestly, that strategy has largely worked for them. I mean, even their playoff loss like depended a lot on a wrong shoe size and James Harden's hamstring injury. Like, this team is just going to be very hard to beat. And when you have Durant, I think they welcome any challengers.
So we had a prescient email written in by a listener, a longtime listener named David. I'm going to read it to you, Rohan.
Is David this the writes, email you threatened to spring on me before we started?
I'm springing it on you right now, okay. Yes. Okay. This is that email. Okay. David writes, hey, open floor team. There's a question that's been in my head all year that has growing significance if the playoff matchups hold. How would you design the perfect player to stop Kevin Durant, and how much would that player look like Evan Mobley? Of course, Mobley is way too inexperienced to stop KD one-on-one. I think only prime Kevin Garnett could have really given this KD problems. Maybe Michael was onto something, picking KG in a mythical one-on-one tournament of all-time great NBA players. Please be kind as you crush any hope I have of the Cavs beating the Nets in a potential play-in game. All the best, David. David, thank you so much. You spot on, perfect email.
Great email.
You nailed it. This matchup is... It motivated me to go back and look to see if Mobley has guarded. These two teams have played each other four times this season. The Cavaliers have won one of those games. Three of them came before the trade deadline, which makes just the regular season is just like all these regular season matchups. Like,
just a bunch
don't
of landmines.
Do your research.
Everything on NBA.com, I'm like, post All-Star break. Like, yes. That's all that matters at this point. I mean, pre-trade deadline with the Omicron surge, et cetera, like, you got to be very selective about which regular season data you're using. In my mind, the Heat are 1-0 against the Celtics this year.
Your mind is a fascinating place, I will say. David, to answer this question, like, I went in and I was trying to look and see if the Cavs put Mobley on KD at any point during the regular season, and they didn't in all but one possession the entire season. The primary defender for KD, can you guess who the primary defender was that the Cavaliers had for Kevin Durant in their four
Lowry
matchups?
Markkanen?
Lowry guarded him the second most frequently. Not Lowry, but that was a very good guess.
Okoro?
No, actually.
Lamar Stevens?
No. You're like never going to guess this. And I was taken aback by it. It's Dean Wade, who is not available to play in this game. He suffered an injury and is out. So, like, I think Okoro will get... I would imagine they'll throw Okoro on Kyrie. That seems like a pretty good matchup there. Mm-hmm. Or maybe even put him on Seth Curry, assuming Seth Curry plays with his sore ankle. And just because that's your best perimeter defender, try to have him take away an option like that. And Seth Curry is low-key extremely important to the Brooklyn Nets, which is absolutely a wild thing to say. But the Mobley... KD question. First of all, the answer is he is the perfect, like, if you are constructing a player in a lab.
I tweeted this out months ago. I said is there one player in the NBA physically capable of guarding KD one-on-one? I think it's Mobley. I tweeted it out months ago, and some guy was like, no one guards anybody one-on-one in the NBA. And I was like, just relax, okay, man? Like it's okay to have some fun. Like, but yes, I agree. I honestly think the only two people I think could have like a level of success against KD one-on-one, I'd put Mobley, and I think Bam is second, but that's the regard to which I hold Mobley, just because he's longer and I think he's a little bit quicker. He's the only guy. It makes sense to me that he wouldn't guard KD one-on-one, only because we know how much the Nets like to attack switches. They haven't had their full complement of shooting this for most of this season. So it also makes sense to me that you put Wade on him and you kind of leverage the length that you have to shrink the floor, help on KD, help off the shooters, trust that your guys are long enough to get back out on whoever their shooters are. So that makes sense to me. But yeah, I think it's Mobley and Bam are the only two people I would have some level of trust in that matchup. And I think like Mobley in 2 years would be like, he needs to get like the time machine version of himself. Like third year Mobley could guard this year's Durant.
Man, third year Mobley is going to be an absolutely terrifying.
KG is also a great pick there. That would be sick to see prime KG going up against this version of KD.
I went to a Celtics Thunder game like, this must have literally been 10 years ago. Longer, and KD scored like, I don't even know, something absurd. And after the game, KG said, "I didn't know we were going up against MFN Michael Jordan tonight." That comment was directed towards the officials and not praising Kevin Durant's game, but the point stands. Really, really hard to think of anyone who could slow this person down. I'll throw Giannis out there as another name.
And we did see them in their last matchup, Giannis actually take the KD assignment, and that was interesting. I was very surprised Giannis didn't have him on that last play. We don't need to get that granular about it. Obviously, he came to double, but yes, I think Giannis, Bam, and Mobley are all in the mix for me.
So I guess now we ask. Is Mobley, if you are JB Bickerstaff, what is your defensive game plan in terms of how you are deploying Evan Mobley throughout the series? Are you starting with him on KD? It's one absolutely game. Not? That's a great point.
Yeah.
That's why you make the big bucks. Yes, this is not a 7-game series. Never mind.
So I don't think you start Mobley on KD. It kind of, to me, is going to depend on if Seth Curry plays. Because if they're playing, let's say they have Bruce Brown and Drummond in, I think you can get away with starting someone. Let's say you start Markkanen on KD and you're helping off the shooters. You know, you're kind of doing what the Pacers did the other night, which is force Brooklyn shooters to beat you. I mean, Bruce Brown did shoot. I think he ended up shooting over 40% from three this season. So it's not like that's an
wide
easy,
open.
Yeah, exactly. Wide open, three seconds to shoot, you know, all the time in the world. The Justice Winslow. He got the Justice Winslow looks from three.
Mm-hmm.
I think is a better way to leverage your length, because you can put Mobley on KD, but you're going to be asking him to fight over screens all game. And, you know, I think there are possessions where you do it, you know, late in the game when it's really, really slowed down. But, you know, they're going to be trying to get switches all night. So I think you maybe start with someone like Markkanen and you're trying to help, you know, at the nail, et cetera.
So the Pacers yesterday played this little 2-1-2 zone and had a ton of success against the Nets. And this is what I'm talking about.
Define
when we're talking
a ton of success, because the Nets did score a whole lot of points.
No, they scored. Yes, they. I should say in the first quarter,
yes,
when the Nets were just obliterating and they had 30 points in the paint, I think, in the first quarter, which is just like not even. It didn't even look like the Pacers were trying to play basketball. Mm-hmm. They were looking to end their season and everyone can go on vacation. That was their disposition in the first quarter. And then they went to this zone a little bit and had some success. But like. The Cavaliers, we know that they like playing Mobley in this 3-2. They have him roam at the top. And I think I would start with that. I would start zone. I would probably play a ton of zone in this game if I was the Cavaliers. I would not, unless it was like a nip and tuck game with 3 minutes left and, you know, things are going down to the wire and KD's hot. That's the only time I would put Mobley on him.
And I agree. That's like when it's like they're burning 20 seconds off the shot clock each possession, working those ISOs. I agree. I think that's the best time to deploy him.
Right. I would just, you know, cross. I would go zone or I would cross my fingers. And, you know, it's really funny because you're going to be playing Kevin Love in this game. And like if you are the Nets, this is just one game. Like, so we're just gonna, whoever Kevin Love is guarding, he's just gonna set a screen for Kyrie or he's gonna set a screen for KD. So that's why I'm just like, we gotta pre-switch everything and make it really complicated, or we gotta just go zone. So I'm leaning zone. And at the bottom line is like I don't want Mobley in foul trouble. And also Mobley might already, I mean, I put him on, I published my ballot today and on my second team all defense, I had Mobley as a forward. Like he's just already one of the best help defenders in the
whole
world.
That's the thing, is he covers so much ground that he can effectively guard KD without guarding KD. And also, yeah, I'm with you. It makes a lot of sense not to start with him. Especially because, you know, between him, Okoro, Markkanen, as goofy as the fit was headed into the season, it's kind of worked when they have everyone healthy. And obviously, Allen was a huge part of that. Do you know where the Cavs rank in defense post All-Star break?
Seventh worst in the NBA.
That is correct. That is correct. They've been in.
You know how I know that, Rohan?
How do you know it, Mike?
Because I read your work.
There
That's
we go.
Why.
I appreciate it. There we go. So, you know. I mean, Mobley missed a week. Allen's obviously missed a ton of time. That's been a big reason for it. So it's going to be interesting to see if they can figure out a way to hold the fort. But when it's been clicking, their length, I think, has really given every team trouble.
Do you feel like we are underestimating the Cavaliers in any way?
No, I just think that, I mean, the Nets' record with Durant has been fantastic. The Cavs, I think, have been a good team, but as we said, their defense is sliding. They're missing one of their best players. I mean, they're missing an all-star center in Jared Allen, who, for now, I think we're both kind of seeing this as though he's not going to play. And, you know, they lack the experience, et cetera. So I don't think we're underestimating them. I just think that they are, you know, they're just kind of playing a different game than the Nets are right now.
So this is the starting five that we're probably going to see if Jared Allen doesn't play. Darius Garland, all-star, cooked the Nets the last time they played. Like, obliterated.
He was fantastic.
Them.
He's had a couple of huge games here down the stretch.
Yes. Yeah. Caris LeVert, former Net,
Kyrie
was traded
LeVert.
For Harden. Yes, exactly.
You mean Kyrie LeVert? Yeah.
Exactly. You know, I went to the South of France before the season began, and that's what everyone was talking about. They were just so hyped for Kyrie.
Yeah.
So anyway, okay, so their starting five is Garland, LeVert, I can't even say it with a straight face anymore, Lauri Markkanen, Evan Mobley, and Isaac Okoro. That's like a really, and then you got Love coming off the bench, who's played, Love had like literally the greatest game in the history of the NBA.
Like 8 of 11 for three? Like what is it? Like he dropped an insane number of threes.
So I'm just like, maybe I will not pick the Cavs in this game, but I do think that, you know, some of the data with, you know, their defense being crummy, it's like Mobley didn't play in a lot of those games also.
For sure, for sure.
So no Mobley, no Allen. You're a crap team. Yeah. I'm sorry. Like your identity is rim protection. So they're still big. And like the Nets, when your defense is that bad as the Nets defense is, it's just,
yes, it's tough. But if it is, I agree. But if I think there's a team that's maybe not the best built to take advantage of it, it's Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, maybe LeVert could go off. He had a big half a couple weeks ago, but they also, it's not like they, I don't know that the Cavs, obviously the Nets make every team look good, but the Cavs maybe don't have the right firepower to go after a Nets defense either.
So this is, I guess, sad. I guess we're both going to pick the Nets here.
Yeah.
Before we move on to the other play-in games, we should quickly touch upon
the Nets Celtics.
Yeah, let's just, you know, it's looking like a likelihood.
No.
Okay, in our text convo, I just want to say that you called the Boston Celtics cowards multiple times.
Yeah.
And on the last day of the regular season, the Boston Celtics could have lost the game and gone to the four seed and played the Toronto Raptors. They played their starters.
Well, they obviously needed to avoid Toronto for other reasons.
They played their start. Hey, I didn't see. There's no Celtics doing any press conferences. Shout out to Misty Stiebel.
Bro, how is he going to take shots? I'm not going to get started on.
We can't. We can't.
Okay. Okay.
But yeah. The Celtics played all their starters. They spanked the Memphis Grizzlies, the Memphis Grizzlies team that didn't play anybody. And then the Milwaukee Bucks played one of the most, like, G League. They just became the Oklahoma City Thunder yesterday in an effort to lose that game to the Cavaliers. And so who's, like, I'm just curious, like, so are the Bucks cowards too? How do we sort out the coward power rankings in Rohan's brain?
Celtics still number one because they were doing the hardest jockeying before yesterday. I think they obviously had to avoid Toronto. And I think the Bucks just wanted to play the Bulls. I don't think they were avoiding the Nets as much as they wanted to play the Bulls.
Yeah. You think? Everybody wanted to play the Bulls. Yeah. We're going to have this big mega playoff preview pod later in this week, so we're not going to step on too much of these matchups, but I just
want to... Kino said he's not scared. That's all I have to say. That's all I'm going to say.
I'm not... No, I don't think that the Celtics should be scared of any team. I think it is fascinating that Ben Simmons could play. That's a fun wrinkle. I don't think that the Celtics should be particularly worried. And
Nets in five.
Winning that game and then having home court in a potential second round series against potentially the Bucks, also a nice thing to have in your corner if you're the Celtics.
I don't think they're going to be using that home court in the second round. I'll just put it that way.
I guess we shall see.
I don't think that home court in the second round is going to come in handy.
We shall see. Okay, so let's go. Let's move on. Let's talk about the 9-10 in the East. The Atlanta Hawks, arguably, are the Atlanta Hawks the most disappointing team? Actually, never mind. I'm sorry. The Los Angeles Lakers exist, and we don't need to get into that.
The Lakers are disappointing, but also neither of us thought the Lakers were going to be very good.
When we did the tiers, we should have had a postseason episode where we like went back and looked at our preseason predictions. Didn't we both have the Lakers like in the top tier in the Western Conference, or like they were up there? Come on.
Yeah,
like,
that's fine.
But
that was more like out of respect to LeBron. But you're right. You're right. We did do that.
Out of the, if we're not talking about the Lakers and we're not talking about the Nets, the Hawks are the most disappointing team in the league. Is that fair to say?
Yes. And the fact that anyone has Trey on their all NBA team, but leaves off Chris Paul, like, just go to a corner and think about what you've done. Don't tell me that he's going to lead the league in total points and assists. Do not tell me that.
Well, first of all, I do not care. That's official.
Because I do not care. You know what Chris Paul's team led the league in, Mike? Wins, okay?
Yeah, they are rewarded by the one seed. I will say, I do have Chris Paul on my All-NBA team.
Good.
When we finish that up.
As I said the last time we had this conversation, if you switched Chris Paul and Trae Young, the Hawks are way better and the Suns are worse.
I don't think I agree with that, but that's fine. And also not how we measure these things. but okay, so let's get to this play-in game. Hawks, Hornets. You wrote about it. You broke it down on SI.com for us. Good offense. Great offense.
Yeah,
from both of these teams. I think the Hornets are second best in offensive rating since the All-Star break, if I'm not mistaken. We'll not have Gordon Hayward, who they've kind of
spiritually moved on from. I mean, he's missed, what, close to 30 games now this season? Yeah. I don't think that they expect to have Gordon Hayward in the lineup. You know what I mean? And they have some really good non-Hayward lineups.
Yes. And so both teams good offense. Both teams, Hawks are 17th in defense since the break. Hornets are 24th. The Hornets gave up last week in two games back to back. I think it was against I forget what teams right now, and I
think
I can
they
look
gave
it up
144 to the Heat
in back to back games. 144. Yeah. I can't remember who the other team was, but yes, the Heat were one of them. I didn't look this up because
it's kind
I didn't
of hard
time.
To give
is
up
that
many points. It's got to be up there, man. That is, and like you just look at them at the end of games, and they're kind of just like, yep, like that's our defense, like.
Right, and I mean, they're playing, I love Isaiah Thomas to death. They're playing Isaiah Thomas in their rotation. This team has been desperate for bigs, like, since the beginning of time, it feels. But in this particular matchup, it's a really interesting one. Like, how are you feeling with, like, what is the most important matchup, would you say? Just pick a offensive player on one team, a defensive player on another. Just what are you most looking forward to when tip-off happens?
I mean, both these teams are obviously going to score a ton. I'm interested to see. I mean, I think with every Hawks game, you're just interested to see how is the opponent going to defend the pick and roll. The last time these two teams played, it was in March. So it's actually like a pretty representative game. Trae Young shot 3-12 from the field. I think he had 15 assists, but only 9 points. And the Hawks were basically like, we're getting the ball out of your hands. They're throwing doubles at him off every screen. We're going to be really aggressive. I think it's just going to be interesting to see how are they going to defend him in the pick and roll. Are they going to go small with Washington at center and go even less defense with Plumlee off the floor? I think Ball, Bridges, Rozier, Washington, and Plumlee has been a really good lineup for them. Yeah, I'm just interested to see, like, are they going to be able to get the ball out of Trey's hands? Because they had a little bit of success with it. And I think DeAndre Hunter's I've been struggling a bit lately. I think when he first came back, he was a little bit more steady. He hasn't been, I think, quite as good as I've expected him to be lately, at least. And again, no John Collins is the expectation for the Hawks. So that's kind of where I go to immediately. Like, are the Hornets going to be able to somehow get the ball out of Trey's hands?
I think that another important question, and that's a good one, and if you look at the numbers, Trey has not had the most success running pick and rolls against the Hornets this season. They've done a fairly good job in their matchups. I think they'll switch a ton. I think not having Collins hurts because you can't switch as much with someone like that who can actually do some damage. He'll get some lobs to Clint, as he always does. And frankly, like if they go down a little bit or if they're scuffling, I wonder if we're going to see Gallo at the five, just ridiculous spacing. That's a possibility as well. But also, I mean, what we have to, if you're James Borrego, like the central tenet of my game plan is like, how are we going to attack Trae Young when we have the ball?
And they have options.
They have a lot of options. And you look at this starting lineup of theirs, and
there's no one for Trae to hide on.
Yeah, I mean, it's like Cody Martin, probably. Like, there's some names out there that get minutes for the Hornets, yeah, and that are important to them. But, like, you're not throwing him on Miles Bridges. You're not throwing him on LaMelo.
I mean, you put
LaMelo.
Him on Rozier or LaMelo. Both those guys are running him into pick and rolls every time down the floor.
So, I think that is a fascinating. You can't put him on, of course, you can't put him on someone like PJ Washington. That's barbecue chicken. So, that's going to be really interesting to see how Trae gets out of those. They obviously do not want to switch anything. So, they'll hedge and recover as best they can. But that's like,
show a little bit of love for hedge and recover? Teams don't hedge and recover enough, if you ask me. Like, the Clippers, like, both years against Luka were like, we're going to switch everything on Luka. And then, like, Luka's cooking them. And then down the stretch of, like, that game 7, for example, or that game 6, all of a sudden the Clippers are like, wait, we have Kawhi Leonard. We have a lot of perimeter length. We're going to hedge and recover. And it was a little bit more effective. Like, let's just once again, everyone wants to switch, but like show a little bit of love to hedge and recover. That's all I'm saying. I mean, you have to have a really good disciplined team to do it. Hornets and Hawks are maybe not our hedge and recover all-stars, but you know, just a little bit more hedge and recover.
I think that's what we need to name this episode.
Yeah.
Show some love. We're showing some love to hedge and recover. Yeah, you're right. These teams are not disciplined enough to execute that on a routine basis. The whole point of switching is it keeps everything else out of rotation. Mm-hmm. If you're hedging and you're recovering and, you know, you're a big who slips, you get the ball, it's a 4-on-3.
It's also easier said than done on, say, Trae Young than other stars.
Right, but Trae, that's... But, you know, a huge part of Atlanta's success in last year's playoffs was Trae's ability to hedge and recover. Mm-hmm. Back to Reggie Bullock or who else? I'm blanking. Danny Green. Mm-hmm. Or Danny Green didn't really play in that series. I can't even remember who he was guarding in Philadelphia, who wasn't really a threat. But whenever he was on them, he was able to get off of it and be fine. So I think that is just a real fun schematic wrinkle that we'll all be watching. It would be really funny if the Hornets did not exploit it and kind of went, because the other thing that is and why coaches are kind of not wanting to do it is it bogs down your offense. And if you're just going one-on-one against a player, even if it is someone as frail as Trae Young is, that's really not how you had the second best offense after the All-Star break. You were not matchup hunting. So it'll be really interesting. I look forward to this game. I'm picking the Hawks, of course, because they have, in my opinion, by far the best player. Sorry, apologies to LaMelo Ball, who's had a really terrific second All-Star season, or second season where he became an All-Star. But yeah, Trae is just, at the end of the day, I think defending his pick and rolls it's like a brain buster. And
right. And the Hawks have been, you mentioned, they finished 17th in defense post All-Star break. They've been a little bit better on that end of the floor. I agree. I'm also taking the Hawks in this game.
Wow. Oh, I was actually not, anticipating that because you've been a Hornets fan?
I'm a big fan of Charlotte.
You like them?
This is a tough matchup for them. I like Charlotte. I mean, they're fun. Shout out to Miles Bridges. Miles Bridges won the Rick Bonnell Award.
Yes.
And, you know, for how he deals with the media, I got to say he was lovely to speak to when we did our Miles Bridges story. So shout out to him. I hope he gets paid. And, you know, they'll still have a chance, but I like the Hawks in this one. Or they won't have a chance. If they're out, they're out. So sorry, Charlotte.
Did you just screw up and think that this was a series as well?
No, I was like, oh, the loser always gets another chance, but that's not true.
Yeah. Low key, the 9-10 is more fun than the 7-8.
Yes.
Maybe that's not even low key, even though the teams are not as like relevant. But anyway, Hawks. We both have the Hawks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The last game, let's move on. Pelican Spurs. This is a basketball game that is being played.
This is the one game that, like, if we didn't get, like, LeBron, Steph last year and we didn't have the Nets in the play-in,
it would just be abolish the play-in, basically.
Yeah, this would be the one that was like, this was a mistake.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm not even going to lie, like, previewing this game feels like a big waste of time. Like, I don't mean to be like glib, and I don't mean to be rude to these two teams. And honestly, San Antonio being here,
it's an achievement.
It's an achievement. You could say, I mean, they clearly, as an organization, were trying to do something else. They trade Derek White for like Romeo. I mean, Josh Richardson has actually been okay for them, so they didn't get back nothing.
Yeah.
But that was a fundamental, like, this is a for the future move. They trade Thad Young, get Goran Dragic. That was for a pick. Wave Goran Dragic, who clearly still has something left in the tank with how he's played in Brooklyn. And all of a sudden, they're in the play-in, and you got to tip your cap to Pop. You got to tip your cap to DeJounte Murray, Keldon Johnson, Jakob Poeltl. Trey Jones played great. Devin Vassell. I mean, this team's just, like, really fun, and at the end of the day, another reason why they're here, we can't go without saying, like, the Lakers were just that bad. And anytime I get a chance to take a shot at the Lakers, I have to do it.
The Blazers lost their last 11 games, I believe, to get out of this one.
So yeah.
Throwing some sub-G League rosters out there.
It's the shenanigans at the end of this season, I feel, went under the radar, honestly, like what the Oklahoma City Thunder did. I even though we bring it up on this podcast basically every episode, like, they played six guys, like 47 minutes. Like, what are we even doing? That was
Thunder basically defunded themselves.
They did. They did.
Yeah.
It's a good way to put it. Like, the winner of this one plays the loser of Timberwolves Clippers for the right to play the Phoenix Suns and probably be roadkill. Do you think, we had a conversation, I want to say 6 weeks ago, I think it was Herring and I, about the Pelicans and how maybe they could make the play-in, and then maybe they could win a couple of games, get in the playoffs, and if they're the eight, you know, Willie Green's their coach, coming from Monty Williams' bench last season, and they have CJ McCollum all of a sudden, who's just like, you know, he can be a fireworks display. Ingram he can score, get buckets on anyone. Obviously, Zion's not coming back, so that's not really a part of the equation anymore, but they were playing this really big lineup, and I was just trying to talk myself into them making any noise. Like, now that we're here and they have a chance, it's at home, I would imagine they will win this game. I don't want to spoil pick.
I think the Pelicans are heavy favorites for me in this game. I mean, they've been one of the better teams in the league, net rating-wise, post-All-Star break.
Yeah.
Their offense, when Ingram and McCollum on the floor together, is elite. And I think that they're built to play well together offensively in playoff games, just because both those guys can, you know, score at the rim. They can score in the paint, in mid-range and from three, capably, which I think will serve them well in a playoff series. But I think they'd be an interesting matchup against a team like Denver or maybe even Dallas or Utah. I don't see them beating Phoenix. So
can they win a game?
Hmm?
Can they win a game?
It just depends how locked in Phoenix comes out for the first round. And just seeing the way Phoenix has played this year,
I have a feeling Phoenix is going to be locked the F in.
Yes. So I'd be a little bit surprised, but it's not impossible, certainly.
I think the bigger obstacle, but like after they beat the Spurs, I don't think they can beat the Clippers.
Or is it the Wolves?
I don't think they can beat the Wolves. Yeah, I think that those two teams are superior. So, is there anything intriguing about this matchup for you? Like, strategically, any one-on-one half-court matchups that are fun? Any stylistic? I know we're pouring water on this game, and I'm going to watch it and have a lot of fun, but it feels very low stakes relative to the other three, I'll say.
Yeah, the only thing, I wrote about this a tiny bit as well. Like, the Spurs have been one of the fastest teams in the league pace-wise. I think they finished fourth in pace. Typically when you're the underdog or the worst team, like, you don't want to play more possessions. At the same time, like, I think San Antonio's best chances, can you speed New Orleans up? Can you keep McCollum and Ingram out of the half court? And can you get easy buckets? Can you get kind of DeJounte playing a little bit more quickly? I think that's kind of their best way to win, and I'm a little bit curious to see that, but am I that curious to see it? No.
Is there a world where DeJounte just, who recently like lost 8 pounds due to some illness?
Yeah.
He's the only All-Star in this game. Yes, that is true. Yes, he is the only All-Star in this game. Is there a chance that he just goes ballistic and somehow carries Wills the Spurs to victory?
Anything's in play. It just is like, it's not. I just think that even like a big DeJounte game, if they get two half decent games from McCollum and Ingram, that's probably enough to offset DeJounte's, big scoring night. So I just don't see it for the Spurs. But I mean, plus, they have Pop. Like, you never know. But
yeah, yes, they do have Pop. Herb Jones. I look forward to watching him.
I got a very upset dog.
He's great. So shout out to Herb, and I would assume that they will throw him on DeJounte. Maybe they'll put him on Keldon Johnson, try to take him out as an option. But yeah, I don't really have too much else to say about this game. I am definitely going to pick the Pelicans, and I assume you're in the same boat, Rohan.
Yeah, I have the Pelicans. This is probably the easiest one to pick outside of Nets Cavs.
So, real quick before we go, who are our 8 seeds? I guess. We did not pick those two matchups.
So theoretically, we're going to get Hawks Cavs. That'll be a good game. That'll be a good game. And with no Jarrett Allen, I think I'm. You know what? I'm going to screw it. I'm going to take the Cavs. I'm going to say the Cavs knock the Hawks out. I'm just going to. I'm going to swerve a bit.
No, don't like it. Who would you rather see? Let me ask it that way.
Oh, like
as a Miami Heat fan.
You'd probably rather see the Cavs, although the Heat are going to struggle in the half court against their defense.
But what about all healthy? Let's pretend everybody's healthy. So Jared Allen's healthy, John Collins is healthy. You'd rather see the Cavs? Because the Cavs, when healthy, are
juggernaut. One of the best team in the East for a long time.
They're tough. They're young.
Yeah, so but you have that I just going think for you'd, them? I think you'd bank on the Cavs being young and inexperienced, and I think that's why you'd take them.
So I think it's going to be the Hawks as the 8th seed in the East, and in the West, I'm going Clippers, of course.
Yeah.
I think Timberwolves are going to win that game, and then Clippers are going to take care of business on their home floor on Friday night. Rohan, we did it. We previewed the play-in. That was a lot of fun.
Pushed the play-in.
Yes, we did. Thank you for your insight and your expertise. Thank you so much to all of our listeners for the wonderful emails. Please keep them coming. Openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. Everybody stay safe. Everybody enjoy the play-in this week.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here, reminding you that American Family Insurance agents can help build a customized renter's policy so you can protect stuff like this, or this, or even this. Case in point. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.